Okay. What in the Torah's perspective, what I want to talk about is what is the ideal form of government according to the Torah? And if you were to ask God, what does God want the Jewish state? How did God want the Jewish state to be governed?
A monarchy.
Monarchy. How do you know? Malchut, very good. Okay? So now, when you have a malchut, when you have a king, that king has, on the one hand, certain responsibilities, but he also has certain rights, certain obligations, but certain privileges that go along with that. For example, the king has the right to establish a tax system. The king has the right to mete out punishments. The king has the right to do all kinds of things of that nature. So now, the question I have for you is, if you have less than what the Torah demands, or something different than what the Torah demands, does that kind of government then have the rights that a melech would have?
No.
For example, if David HaMelech got up and said, I want to disengage from Gaza, would we be having this discussion right now?
There's always like a subhead in addition to the Malchus. If it were simply a strategic or military decision, perhaps the Malchus would have that right. But if it were a question of all, if it's halachically correct,
Does he have to go ask? No. Must the king go ask if he wants to make a state decision, a military decision?
No.
What? Whose decision is it? This is where it gets a little complicated. Whose decision is it if it's a military decision or a halakhic decision? You understand what I'm saying?
Right. Well,
this is the issue that the state of Israel that's grappling the state of Israel now. I mean, you know. Like I said, the reason I got into this whole topic was because I'm very interested in knowing what are the ramifications. This issue of disengagement goes to the heart and core of what is the state of Israel, what is a legitimate government, what is considered military and political versus halachic, who makes those decisions. These are fundamental core principles that go to the heart of what does it mean to be a Jew in Israel today. And that's why this issue is so gut-wrenching and so all-encompassing. You know, we can only imagine, I'm giving a shiur in America, it doesn't affect our daily lives, but in Israel it goes to the heart of what does it mean to me to be a citizen of Israel. I was talking to Rabbi Fass tonight. He told me, and maybe I should record this on the tape, but he said, he's not sure when he gets back if he's going to tell them that he's back until after the disengagement. Because he has serious halachic issues about whether he feels he can serve. So I'll just not tell him he's back until he gets there. So I hope nobody Israeli is going to like listen to this here on the internet and
he's asking her to register with
Miluim when they call him up.
He's going back on.
Nah, they never talk to each other. You have to tell them you're in Israel so they'll call you up.
You mean when
it's like taxes. Right. If you don't pay your taxes, sooner or later it might catch up with you.
You go in and your passport control and there's like, oh, you're back.
But from what he told me, he said it's not so simple. It's not so simple. Anyway.
I become so mad that I don't understand people anymore.
So the question, right, yeah. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, in Israel we have a democracy. They have a democracy. For better or for worse, it's some form of democracy. Right. Does that democracy have the status of melech? To say, well, the melech has the rights to make territorial decisions, has the rights to make, decisions that have to do with political issues. Or, well, you'll say, democracy is all fine and good, but it's subservient to whatever the rabbis are going to tell them, in the halachic point of view. Harel Sharon might not be interested, but this is a very important issue.
But the rabbis aren't united.
And it depends which rabbis. So what do you say?
For better or for worse, this is the form of government that they have.
Again, but I have to ask myself as a religious Jew. So I said, I'm a religious Jew. Does Ariel Sharon have the right to make this decision according to Jewish law?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't think he's very learned in Jewish law.
No. Again, you understand that that's not my question. The Melech was not always that learned in Jewish law.
Okay, he's not a Melech. He's the second leader of the country.
And an accepted leader as a country, does that give him, by definition, the right to then go ahead and make the various decisions that need to be made? For example, but I'm saying the Knesset as a body, he is the leader and the body of the Knesset. Let's say as a rule, Cheryl, they decide that they have to go out and, send a soldier out into Jenin to go fight a battle. Does he have the right to send that soldier out? Yes or no?
Yes.
How could he have that right? If he's not a melech, if he's just an individual, what right does he have to risk the life of somebody else?
Because we gave him that power.
Who's we? I'm an individual soldier. Let's say I'm drafted by the Israeli army. I'm not volunteering. I don't want to go. I'm afraid. I don't want to go. I'm forced to. I'm compelled by the government of Israel. I'm not asking you as a citizen. I'm asking you halachically. Would the Torah then compel me to go? Because my government leader compelled me to go.
No, there are even rules to that.
What?
There are even rules to that. You can be drafted, but you can still walk away from the battle before you go out because of the way that it's done.
Because you're afraid. Now you're afraid.
If you don't have the heart to go into battle.
What happens if I disagree? I have the heart, but not politically, I disagree.
Political disagreement does not.
No, I'm not asking you laws of Israel. I'm asking you halacha.
Halacha.
The king decides, Shlomo HaMelech, I live in town of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech decides we're going to go attack, Shaibin. He goes. And I say, Shlomo, you are an imperialistic, despot. Your aims are controlling the world. Forget it. I'm not going
to
do it.
You have to go.
Halachically.
Halacha.
Oh, good. Now, can Ariel Shur, does he have the same halachic power? Whether you like him or not, whether you agree with him or not, he's not religious, does he have the same halachic power?
Point about him being an elected.
There we go. Yes, but
that's complicated. Further, what if he's elected on a platform that he goes 180 degrees from?
Okay, that's another issue.
So that happened
now, I hate to beg you, Steve. I happen to not have sympathy for that argument. Because when you elect an individual, he could tell everybody knows that in politics, whatever the guy promises you, it's a total lie. I just read a book. I was coming back from Washington, so I needed to buy a book to pass the time. I read a book called Joining the Flying Circus by a woman named Alexandra Pelosi, the daughter of Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. So this woman Pelosi, she has apparently her stick, I found out by reading the book, her stick is she takes a video camera and she videos whatever goes on in these political campaigns. And her whole point of the book was, very interesting, the process of electing a president and the process of being a president are two totally separate things that have nothing to do with one another. In order to get elected president, you have to have a tremendous stamina to say the same thing over and over and over again and basically not make a mistake. In order to be president, you have to have some guts. He says, but we all know that whatever the guy says to get elected has absolutely zero bearing on what he's going to do when he's president. And if you would ask somebody, I take a poll, how many people think that candidates lie? Right? Raise your hands.
Read
my lips. Oh, we all think candidates lie. What?
Read my lips.
So to come along and say, you were the one who said, you didn't believe me anyway. You never believe anything I said. You're stuck with the candidate. You know that you're stuck with the candidate. But it doesn't make it easier. It makes it harder. It makes it a bitterer pill to swallow. Okay, so that's what we want to talk about. How does democracy come up in Jewish law? And that's the topic of the discussion. We're going to see clearly how, we'll put it this way, the Dati Lu'umi, the Chioni Dati camp perspective always. Actually, I've given you that many of your time.
So it's one thing here,
yeah. Yeah. There are sets. Right. Okay? We're going to read some of the sources, and then we're going to see some troubling, I'll put this way, we will see some troubling developments.
There's nothing wrong here, Bonnie.
Uh-huh.
Only in your head.
Yeah.
Because Jewish law is not a democracy.
Right. Correct. Absolutely not. Right. Jewish law is not democracy. Let's say, for example, we all got together and decided that we were going to permit treif, like
whatever.
Reform. Right? Jewish law is not a democracy. You can decide to permit anything you want. But you're bound to halacha. It doesn't make it mutter. And that's something, some of the things that we have to explain at the meeting today, at this VOD meeting, that, you know, I could be sympathetic to the plight of the JCC from here till tomorrow, but Shabbos is still Shabbos.
Right.
You know, and there are still guidelines that we have to follow.
And why are you open on Shabbos?
Well, they're open on Shabbos.
They're really open on Shabbos.
You don't have
the JCC. Well, the restaurant is not open on Shabbos. The JCC is asking to allow the VAD to have events, to allow events to take place on Shabbos. Meaning they want to have catered events on Shabbos. Until now, the VAD's policy always was that we are an organization that not only cares about whether the food is kosher, but we're also an organization that cares, you know, that people should keep Shabbos. But if you had to choose between that value, which is obviously a tremendous value, or losing the restaurant, and the people are going to drive somewhere else anyway, that makes it much more difficult. So what we'll probably do is we're going to pull back and make a major concession and say we're just going to give a hashgacha on the food and make sure that the food is kosher, and however people get there, that's their business. It's a very hard thing to do. You do it like, you know, with tears in your eyes, but at the same time, we feel very strongly, and it was kind of very clear that unless we allowed that to happen, the restaurant would close. And the restaurant, I think, is that we feel very strongly is an important tool for many people in the community to have at least one avenue. They can take a business partner, they can take, they have a place to go out. We felt that it was a very important thing. So sometimes
they will have events on Shabbos.
Probably. If it happens the way, you know, they will have catered events on Shabbos. Right, that's if you we need to find a mashgiach that's willing to go there and be there. You know. Right. You know. Who wants to do that? What's that? Yeah. I mean, what can I tell you? You know, this is, you know, it's not always a choice of good or bad.
There are restaurants in other cities that are open on Shabbos.
For people who walk, like in Manhattan.
How do you know whether you walk or not?
Right, but I mean, if there's a theoretical, how do I know that when you come to my shul on Shabbos, you walk?
You don't.
Right. And so I'm not going to question you, but obviously you have to make a rule based on what the majority of people are doing. In Manhattan, most people live in proximity enough that they could walk. At the West Bloomfield JCC, nobody's walking to the bar mitzvah from Temple Israel. It's just not what it is, you know. So they're not always good choices to be made on every side. Sometimes you have to pick between the lesser of all evils. Okay, and this is this also. Shalaz Rambam, Halchos Malachim. You have Hebrew and English for most things. Melech HaMashiach Atid Lamod Ulahasir Malchus David the Yoshna the Memshela Harishona. The Davidic kingdom, the kingdom of Mashiach, will return his kingdom to its original state and its original form of government, its rules. Ubone HaMikdash, Umekabe Sidcha Yisrael. He'll build the base HaMikdash, and he'll bring the ingathering of the exiles. V'chozim kol mishpatim b'yamav k'shayu mikonem. And he's going to bring back all of the rules. Makbivim korbanos, he's going to bring sacrifices. Osim shmitin v'yovlos, t'chol mitzvah sahamura b'torah. He's going to do shmita and yovel like with the Torah. V'chol mi she'eno ma'amin bo. You don't believe in him. Oh, Misha Enu Mechakel Abiyasav. You're not waiting for him to come. Lo B'Shar Neviim B'Avadu Kofer Ela B'Torah Over Moshe Rabbeinu. Mashiach will come and he will reinstitute the rabbinic law. He's going to reinstitute the law as it was. So we see that in the future, the Rambam said there's going to be a government that's going to be the Melech HaMashiach, the King of the Mashiach, that's going to reestablish the law. Fine. Very good. What happens until that happens? What do we do before the Melech HaMashiach comes? What do we do in the situation now? The Rambam, it's very difficult to envision because who invented democracy?
Greeks.
The Greeks invented democracy? The Greeks were elected democratically? Think of the emperors?
No, talking about Athens.
Who invented democracy as a political system?
The United States.
I think it was the United States.
The first successful large-scale democracy.
Right. I mean, people could theoretically envision it. It was envisioned as a form, but not as a legitimate government. So it is very interesting. You know, the Rambam, things that are obvious to us, these people couldn't envision. It wasn't in the realm of the idea of a person's ideology. You know, in theory, one could imagine that, but the Rambam never addressed it because democracy didn't exist. So what do you do with democracy? So we have a few sources that deal with this idea. Okay? Says the Torah, Atem Yitzavim Hayom, source number 2, Kulchem, Lifnei Hashem Elokechem, Rasheichem, Shifteichem, Zikneichem, Beshotreichem, Kol Ish Yisrael. Alright? You stand before God, meaning when it's Kodesh Baruch Hu at the end of the Torah saying, Atem Yitzavim, you're all standing, it's everyone together, Kol Ish Yisrael. Says the Midrash, source number 3, Rasheichem, Shifteichem. Right? The Midrash says, af al pi, see source number three, af al pi, shemaniti lachem rashim v'shoftim zikenim v'shoftim. Even though some people are appointed as judges and policemen and heads and leaders, kuchem shavim lefanai. Says the midrash, you're all equal before me in my eyes. Shenamar, as it says, kol ish Yisrael. Now, this is a nice, by the way, the midrash is beautiful. It's the underpinnings of the Declaration of Independence, that we believe that all men were created equal, you know, and with unalienable rights. Yeah, but inalienable, right? Except, of course, the midrash was, I'm just pointing out that this midrash exists in the literature, but it didn't really have any ramifications.
It's not feasible. It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
In practical government. People are always, if you are appointed a leader, no matter how equal you think you are, you have other responsibilities that no longer make you equal.
Correct, but it doesn't, no, you're still equal. You're still a human being. You're still an individual. Yeah. You're not better or any worse. And the idea of, monarchy, at its root means that this person is more important, this person is better. Democracy says that nobody is better than anybody else. We all have the democracy says that since we're all basically equal, we can choose a government, we can choose a leader of our own choosing that will then represent us and take care of us and do all the things that need to be done. But a monarchy was never based on that. The monarchy was based on, I'm born better than you. And because I was born better than you, when I die, you know who's going to be in charge? My son, not you. Anybody but you. You know, anybody here like Prince Charles? I think there's a whole big hullabaloo in England that Prince Charles he made a scene because some lady was fetching to him that she couldn't get ahead in her job, and so he said something to the effect of, "Everybody wants to be the king of England, as it were. How come people aren't happy being in their station in life?" And so there was this whole big tumult. That here you, Mr. Prince Charles, you are born with a silver spoon in your mouth. You never had to work a hard day in your life. Everything was always given to you. Of course things are great for you. Right? Put the shoe on the other foot for a minute, and then maybe you would understand that something about equality. Okay. So there is an idea of the essential equality of human beings in the Torah, in the Midrash. Says the Rambam, another Rambam. Rishus yesh l'melech litein mas al ha'am, l'tzarchav o l'tzarchav mechamos. The king has permission to put a fine, to put a tax on people for his needs or for war. The kotzev lo meches, rasu lahavriach miha meches. If he establishes a tax, you're not allowed to evade taxes. You have to pay. But usher doesn't mean usher, he's going to put you in jail. Usher means, no. Torah usher. Forbidden from the Torah. Why? Sheyesh lo bigzor, he can decree. Shekol mishi yignov hameches yilakach mamono o yeharek. If you evade taxes, we'll take your money or you'll be killed. Meaning the Torah gave the king authority. The king has power. That's Torah given power. Shenema v'atem tiyuli v'avadim. No, but you should be slaves to him. Ulahalan omer, there it says, yulach alamash v'avaducha. You have to worship the king. Mikan, from this we learn, shenotein mash v'koseid meches, he can establish taxes and fines, v'dina b'chol eilu ha'dvarim v'kiyot v'hem din. His decisions are din. Shekol ha'amr b'parashas melech, melech zolchado. By the way, where is the parashas melech? Where is the section about a king being appointed, his rights? Anybody know? Very good. Shmuel Aleph. In Shmuel. Remember, when people come to Shmuel and say, we want a king.
Right, but that's in Shoftim.
That's in the book of Shmuel.
Sibyl,
oh, wait, you mean the Parsha Shoftim.
Yeah,
no, but all the rules of what the rights a king has comes in the book of Shmuel. Because when the people came to Shmuel and said, we want a king, Shmuel said, you want a king? Do you know what he's going to do to you? He's going to make you slaves, and he's going to make you do this and do that, and they say, yeah, we want him anyway. So the halacha is, everything that Shmuel said, that was the rule. That was accepted. Page 2. Okay, so the question we're faced with is, does a democratically elected leader have the right to be the melech and have those rules apply to him also? Because if he does, then Ariel Sharon, whether you like it or not, may have the right to decide to disengage from Gaza. And you, as a citizen of Israel, are halacha bound to listen and to obey. Maybe. We're going to see that it's tied up to a lot of other issues, but maybe. And that's, so it's important to understand what is the status of the government.
How does the king get to be the king?
Ah, excellent question. How does the king get to be the king?
I don't know.
God chooses him.
And in the case of real Sharon, he gets to be the head of the government through the political mechanisms of the various maneuverings of the various parties.
Well, I know how you say that, but theoretically, he's chosen by the people.
Actually,
right, I know, he doesn't agree either.
Agree.
Right. Theoretically, he's chosen by the people, correct?
Yeah.
So now you're asking me, well, God didn't choose him, the people chose him. So he's not anything then.
Well, if he's the head of state.
So then what status would he have?
Not the same status as somebody chosen by God.
Oh, okay. So then what's your other option? Your other option would say that Ariel Sharon has the same status as... As? Ariel Sharon to an Israeli has the same status as George Bush to an American. Right? According to halacha, do I have to pay my taxes in America?
Yes.
Why? Who's George Bush?
The law of the land.
Oh, what's the halacha? What's it called? Dina d'malchuta is dina. But, so if you say that the law on the land is just dina d'malchuta dina, then the Israeli government is stripped halakhically of many different rights. That's exactly what we're talking about. You have just pinpointed the issue. What is Sharon? Is he the President of the United States or is he the King of Israel?
I think he's more like the President of the United States.
What?
He's like the President of the United States, but it happens to be in Israel.
Okay, let's see.
Or as Putin pointed out, our democratic system was the first time Bush was got appointed by the court. He wasn't elected by the people.
Who pointed that out?
Putin went through because Bush keeps sticking it at him. Putin stuck it at him today.
My God.
Oh, but think about it.
Will those Democrats ever get over it? I mean, really. Anyway,
no,
okay.
You think about it.
I'll say, you know, Putin's a Democrat.
Oh.
Okay.
Like a
says the Torah, Lotana.
Yeah,
he's a brutal dictator, Democrat. Okay, Lotana Acharei Rabim Laros, Lotana Rivim Tos. Says the Torah, Acharei Rabim Lahatos. The halakha of Acharei Rabim Lahatos means we interpret it. Acharei Rabim Lahatos means if you have judges, right? They sit in a court. So how do you decide? Let's say you have 21 judges and they're sitting in judgment. So how do you decide to make a decision? Acharei Rabim Lahatos. What's Acharei Rabim?
Majority
rule. So immediately you see that there's a concept in Judaism of majority rule. And it's established by the Torah that the majority rule is that when 13 judges think one thing and 8 think another thing, 13 have their way. Because one could instinctively say it would either be all or nothing. Unanimous decision or nothing. Or the greatest person makes the decision. But no, there's not. There is a such a thing as majority rule. Says the Tosefta, source number 6. Kofin b'nei ha'ir zeh es zeh midnot mehem beit knesset. I come to Oak Park, and it's a mishmash. It's all a nightmare, right? And there's no shuls, there's no mikvah, there's no nothing. So the community has the right to coerce each other, to force one another, to build a shul. The listeners will have a Sefer Torah, Unavim, and to buy a Sefer Torah, and to buy a Haftorah. Unavim means a Haftorah book. Ushayim b'nei ha'ir lahasnos al hasha'arim v'al amidos v'ascho ha'poalim. Ushayim lasos kisasa. Okay? And they're permitted to fix market prices and weights and measures. Now you're getting to serious things. It's one thing to say, well, you know, we have to build a shul. But it's another thing to say, in our community, we charge $1.97 for a gallon of gas, not more. And prices and milk, and this is what we charge. Wow, it's free market. Why can't I choose what I want? Who has the right to coerce me? Says the Tosefta, no. That they can get together and make the decision and have an impact and impose their will on a minority. Who doesn't want to be imposed upon? Okay, one
but
second.
In any situation or in simply the situation of building a community, building a kehila, building a Beit Knesset?
Oh, one second. Lama koshish yira etz aploni yehinos in kach v'kach, v'chomish yira etz amalchus yehinos in kach v'kach. This is how much each person has to give to the king or to the government. V'chomish yitirso tira paraso ben akramim yehinos in kach v'kach. You want your cow to go graze, you have to pay a grazing fee. They're allowed to establish all of these things. So we already see the makings of a democracy in a sense. You know, I always thought, you know, here in our community, there are so many needs, and it works to some degree that everybody, you know, pays in and sort of supports the mikvah and supports the eruv. But it would be much better if, you know, when you came to the community, it was expected that you would have to, you're a member of, let's say WOL or whatever it was, and your WOL membership didn't cost, how much is it, $25?
15.
15 bucks. It cost $150. And your $150, a certain amount went to the mikvah, a certain amount went to the eruv, a certain amount, just the basic community necessities. And that way they wouldn't have to scrounge for money all the time. You know, we all take advantage of these community resources. You have an obligation to support them. You know, obviously you have hardships or whatever, and that's not what I'm, you know, but that's what the Tosefta says. So what right does this community have? I come into the community and I say, you know what, I don't really want to pay for the mikvah. I'm interested. And they say, no, you have to pay your share in the shul. What right do they have? Halacha gives them the right to govern in order to maintain a certain standard of necessity in the community. In other words, what would we call that?
Yes.
Right, yeah, that's true. Right.
Coercion speech.
Okay. Okay.
But again, my question is, these are only things that are for the communal good, for the community to benefit itself, to benefit its members.
Good.
It's not an indiscriminate...
And what would happen if the community came together and appointed a leader,
mm-hmm.
and that, like, let's say, a president,
mm-hmm.
and that president would have the power to impose dues, either full dues or partial dues on an individual based on his own needs.
Mm-hmm.
Would the community have the right to do that?
Well, that's my question.
Sure we do.
So if the president decided he needed a palatial mansion instead of a modest dwelling like everybody else,
right.
Does he have the right to impose a tax so that could
benefit? I guess, and then they have a right to get rid of him.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, that's the problem with every system of government.
Mm-hmm.
It is prone to abuse.
Well, I'm talking about
any system of government is prone to abuse.
It's okay.
You're saying, but what would be if an elected leader would then do something to the detriment of that society? Oh, so that's the real question here.
Right.
And our larger issue, is it to the detriment of society, or do some people think it's a detriment and other people think it's not?
Which case, majority rules.
In which case?
Majority rules.
Majority rules. That's exactly right. It makes it a lot more complicated. Says the Gemara, number 7. Rabba Amar Hefker Beis Din Haya Hefker. The Beis Din had the right to say something was Hefker. So, for example, if I wanted to build a road, we'll call it 696, and you had a house that was going through my road area, in theory.
Gee, we're here.
Which there were.
Right? So then the court, the Jewish court, would have the right to go and claim your land and say it's Hefker, it belongs to nobody. How they have the right to do that? So the Gamar of Yitzchak, Meinayin Shehefker, Beis Din Haya Hefker, Shenemar, as it says, the Chol Asher Le'Yavo, Shlosh Asher Amin, Ka'atzas Asharim, Ba'azakeinim, Yecheram Kol Rechusho, In Ezra was leader of the Jewish community at the time. He was not a melech, by the way. Right? He was leader of the community.
He was what?
Not the king. He was the leader. Who appointed Ezra the leader, by the way? How did Ezra become the leader? He had permission from a foreign king. It was like a UN appointee. Right? He made the rule, if you don't come back to your land within the next 3 days, it's gone. It doesn't belong to you anymore. You're out. What right did he have to do that? The right that he, the fact that he did that shows us that the appointee, the Beis Din, the power of the time, has the right to make to be mafkir, to make it hefkir, to make it ownerless. Elazar Melacha Mehacha, Rabbi Elazar said from here, from Yeshua Yitest. Eila Nachalos Asher Nachalu Elazar Akol Yeshua Benun Rashi Ha'avos. These are the inheritances, the land that were given out from the Yeshua and Elazar and the head of the Avos. The Chimayin Rashim Elzal Avos. What is Avos doing there? Just like parents can give their children, they inherit them, you take what you want. Very strong language. So to Rashim, what are Rosh? Rashim? Heads. Community heads. They can inherit to the community whatever they want. Or, some would argue, disinherit. Take it away. If they can give it to you, and take it away. Okay? Next. This is from much later on. We now go 1,000 years ahead in history to the sponsor, Rabbi Shlomo Ben Adaret, the Rashba. So he was talking about a totally separate thing, but he was talking about community power. issues of community rule. So the Rashbar writes, says the Rashbar, do I have English here? Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's a good thing I have English. This is serious stuff. Okay. Says the Rashbar, Sher b'chol kahal u'kahal, ein min ne'im mi la'asot takanot v'charamim v'kiyumim, afapi she'im rov she'ein sham rov ha'kahal. In every community, he says, the leaders of the community have to make decrees and charamim. Charam is a ban. Right? Apparently, it's very clear when you learn Sephardic literature that if you belong to the community of Fez, for example, in order to keep a person in line, if they didn't like the way you're behaving, they put you in charam. And they did it a lot. I think Ashkenazim usually put people in charam more, and the Sephardim would fine people more. If they find you, you better pay her. You're not going to get an aliyah. You're kicked out of the community. You know, and we're not talking about in America where if young Yisrael puts me in Chayrim, right, I'm going to go to Bnei Yisrael two rows down. That's America for you. In those communities, you know, when they put you in Chayrim,
it meant something.
That's one of the tribes that we have nowadays with the recalcitrant husbands. You know, recalcitrant husbands that refuse to give their wives a get. You know, you make a chayrim, you make a statement, this person has not given his wife a get, so what does he do? Goes on the block. You know, and there's always another shtibel that will be happy to take it. So it becomes hard to enforce. What do you do? Anyway. Okay. Ki yaneh akahal, mishurim heim lagadolim. The communal factors are given over to the leaders. Ulu mikchas min hakahal. And even though it's not, you know, every time the community wants to get together, aside from our shul, you don't have a whole shul meeting and decide what kind of toilet paper should we put in the bathroom, other than our shul. Right? Yeah. But, right? Rather, we appoint a leader, and he decides what kind of toilet paper, and then we catch about it. I'm kidding.
No, that's
right. Right. Shehem apotropsim, they are like, an apotropos was an appointee. They are like the responsible. V'shar achem shababakam. They're responsible. Upamim kado akal gado yo le'elef. V'lo yiskansimim rak shloshi marba'im yosem lacha. Well, you have 1,000 people, but who's on the assembly? 30 people, 40 people. They can put in chaimim. They not shy me crying, but alochim. How can 40 people rule 1,000? That's the way it is. See, in ain't to overcame. If you don't say this, lo yuchlu b'shum kahal asos melacha. No community can get anything done. Ulahon ki shum hotzaah. They can never spend any money. Ulo lasot shum takanak klali. They can never make any decisions. Ad shiit kabtu sham kol kahal palei hamas. But the Rashi Yisrael Hutas Mamon until, well, the shul decides we need a new printer. Sorry, can't get a new printer until they have a shul meeting to decide what printer. And you know what's going to happen? Well, I've got a Hewlett Packard. Well, I've got an Epson. And they're going to have resolutions to create a committee to decide should we get a Hewlett Packard printer or should we get an Epson printer? Steve is like nodding, so knowing. Yeah. This is 1,000 years. This is the Rashbam lives in front. The Rashbam lives in the 1200s, right? You know, he didn't have the war. You think it was any different in times of Moshe Rabbeinu? And I always say in the Chet HaEgel, the thing that amazes me most about the Chet HaEgel is that they built the Egel in 24 hours. 24 hours! My God, can you imagine if today when you would have said, Gaari, we need an Egel. Okay, I'll appoint a committee. Like 3 years later, we've got the designs for the Egel, but you have to submit bids. You know. Right, they didn't know any better. You know, what can I tell you? Okay, yeah. But Hanashim ka'anashim, the women like the men, ki mi yivzal mamonim ba'al v'sifim, who's going to decree our money? Ela she'gidolei amas, v'chas min ha'kal, creator, the leaders, ka'apashrapasim al-yata ha'kal. So obviously, the Rashbam says, it's intuitive, it's common sense. We elect a representative, we elect a leader, and we give him broad powers to make those decisions for the betterment of the community. Fine. So now we're going to go all the way to the Shut Mishpachon of Rav Kook. And Rav Kook was one of the fathers of the modern Orthodox community, the Zionist community in Israel, and he brings up this issue as well. In the middle of it's a long tshuva, it's a long letter about a lot of different things about capital punishment and all those good things. So the Rav Kook says, Chutz mizeh nira hadvarim. It seems like shebizman she'ein melech. What about our times and there's no king? כיוון שמשפטי המלוכה הם גם כן מה שנוגע למצב הכללי של האומה. Since the laws of kingdom, of governing, also apply to the general מצב כללי, the general situation of the nation, חוזרים אלה הזכויות של המשפטים ליד האומה בכללה. If there's no king, so then the rights and the rules of governing return back to the people. Very interesting idea. Yeah, the Torah said you have to have a king. What if there's no king? So then what do you have? You have anarchy? So it's no. There exists the right to rule the people. Somebody has the right. There's only one problem. The guy's not there. So who owns the right to rule? The answer is, we do. Right. Ubiyichud nireh, it seems specifically, shegam kol shofet shekam b'Yisrael din melech lo. Quoting him specifically. Kol shofet shekam b'Yisrael. Any shofet, what was a shofet? It wasn't just a judge. If you read the book of Shoftim, they weren't judges primarily, they were leaders. They were guides, in a sense.
People make decisions.
Din melech yeshbo, l'inyan tamu mishpatei melucha. Very, very strong, you understand what we're getting? Very strong language, important language. L'inyan, right? U'biyichud, specifically, what issues? L'mashe nogea l'hanagat haklal. Specifically, to those things that relate to running a community. Like political decisions, military decisions, things of that nature. Rafilu b'inyanim ha-pratiim, in the small things. Hare ha-pilegah sh'dat ha-rambam, pirek dal ha-rach ha-dal, v'she'ena mu-terekim la-melech lo le-hedyo. Pilegah, who was a concubine, was only allowed to a king. Sh'ram b'tshuva ha-va b'keshav Moshe, perek alav ishu, sikshah ala b'dvar. Let's skip a little bit. About a pilegah, second line from the bottom, aval. But, l'mashu no-geah b'hanhad ha-klal. Those things that relate to the community, Kol ha-mishamanhig et ha-uma, anyone who leads, who rules the nation, danu b'mishpatei ha-melucha. He judges with the mishpatei ha-melucha, the rules of the kingdom. Shem klal tzarchei ha-uma, hadushim l'sha'atam ulema'amad ha-olam. So what did you say before? What is Ariel Sharon? Is he President of the United States, Dina de Malchut Adina,
no.
Or is he the Melech?
He's president, but he's given the power to
the king. Halachically, it seems like, according to what Cook says here,
mm-hmm.
Very different. So you say, well, then, if that were really true, does Ariel Sharon have the right to disengage?
Yes. Yes.
So I was shaking her head no. Why?
Because of what we learned last week.
Which is?
Well, there was
right. Are you guys thoroughly confused?
No, I don't remember. There's a problem with where the outline was.
There's only one more fact that you have to take into account. Let's go skip to source number 11. Yeah, because the reason you're shaking your head, I know why you're shaking your head now, and I'll tell you why. So now I'm not even going to do this to me, but this is again, Rav, this is a letter written by Rosh Yivat Merkaz Rav of Avram Shapira, Shlita, of Avram Shapira, former chief rabbi of Israel. Avram Shapira is still alive today, alive and well. In response to the queries made by a distinguished member of the Knesset, in reply to your letter to me, I am answering in brief the questions you have raised. There is no conflict between democracy and halakha. Throughout the long years of the diaspora, the Jewish people maintained their existence everywhere, by means of independently elected community institutions. We saw it in the Gemara, we saw it in Tosefta, we saw it in the Rambam, we saw it in the Rashba. We saw all those sources to show us. Democracy, great! They lived in a completely democratic manner, as we learn from the writings of the Poskim, who discussed matters pertaining to the community's mode of life. In our own day, too, the Knesset has, I believe, from the day of its establishment, functioned in a democratic manner in accordance with the will of all the political factions, including the religious parties, who would receive the sanction of distinguished rabbanim whom they follow. Here you go. The only limit in terms of Jewish law to the authority of the elected members of the Knesset is that they not make any decisions in contravention to the halakha. So, if the Knesset would stand up tomorrow and say, that all citizens of the state of Israel must, eat pork. Right? That, you know, it's a rite of passage in the state of Israel. In order to get your driver's license, you have to eat pork. So would we then be able to say, well, the Knesset is the Melech, and a power emanates from the people, et cetera, et cetera. What? Right. The Rambam says a Melech cannot command you to contravene halacha. Okay? So let's just read on, because it's a very interesting piece. B. In a case where a law enacted by the government is in opposition to Piskei Halacha, which forbid what the government allows, there is no way that what is forbidden to a Jew becomes permissible simply because the members of the government have decided otherwise. The principle that there is no higher authority than the law of the Torah and the Halacha is so simple and absolute that no Rav can have any doubts on the matter. And he says it as clearly as can be. Indeed, such a person's belief in Judaism itself is flawed since he lacks the essential principle of Torah belief. Meaning, if I believe that the Knesset can make a law contravening the Torah, then I don't believe in the absolute authority of the Torah. According to the Halacha, prohibitory laws can be set aside only by pikuach nefesh, and the life, or when there's a positive command which overrides the prohibitory law. But these are principles which must be determined only according to Halacha. The absence of halachic literature on subjects pertaining to Jewish state in contemporary times will not impede distinguished rabbanim from pronouncing judgments in according with the halachic precepts as laid down in the two Talmidim and in the writings of the Polskim. Meaning, so that this obviously the member of the Knesset had written and said, there is no literature about democracy. Says Rav Shapira, don't worry about it. You know, we'll figure it out. That's exactly what he said. We'll figure it out, based on precedent. In each generation, new issues are raised and resolved by the great Torah scholars of that generation by means of judgments based on halachic sources. They didn't have MRIs in the 1200s, but we use the 1200s and the sources going down through the ages to teach us how to use an MRI. Fine. Through their proficiency in the mysteries of the Torah, the great Torah scholars can understand and delve deep into the very roots of halachot, and to them are revealed the foundations of the law upon which they must base their judgments. And these things are simple and well known. If there are differences of opinion and disputes between authorized rabbanim in reference to a pshat on some particular judgment, the law in every case is that where there is a doubt concerning a matter pertaining to biblical law, the judgment must be according to stricter interpretation. If there is a doubt concerning a matter pertaining to rabbinic law, then you can be permissible. So he gives them, you know, who the authorized rabbi is, etc., etc. So on the last page, okay, E. That's on page 5. The general rule that the law of the land is binding, dina de malchuta dina, refers only to monetary matters and communal affairs which can be settled to the mutual agreement of the parties involved. Legislation dealing with such cases can conform to the wishes of the civil authority, but the civil authority does not have the power to be determinant in matters involving prohibitory laws of the Torah to which a Jew is bound. Meaning, you say, isn't there halacha dina de malchuta dina? Sure, dina de malchuta dina, but never dina de malchuta dina in a place where it contradicts the Torah. So therefore, if Swiss society were to come out and say shechita is inhumane and shechting is not allowed, that doesn't mean that a Jew is then permitted to say, well, I'll give you the malchus adina, and therefore I'm bound by that and I can eat non-shechted meat. Sorry, it doesn't work that way. To the best of my knowledge, this is a very interesting line. In all the years of its existence, the Knesset has passed no law compelling the public to act in a manner which the rabbanim has opposed and which they have forbidden the Israeli public to obey. The only exception was the case of the military conscription of girls. The Ramanim pronounced this to be against halacha and decreed that religious girls must be exempt from conscription into the army. And kachava, that's exactly, and the government acquiesced. The law on abortion, as it was formulated, and similar laws are still in opposition to halacha, but the Jewish public is not compelled to pattern its behavior according to them. At any rate, it is not possible for us to prevent others from following such laws, but for ourselves and our children, we must proclaim that it is forbidden to obey a law which is in opposition to the Torah. We hope that you will find the way to ensure that our people do not find themselves in a situation in which they are faced with actual contradictions of the law of the Torah. And love you, truth, and peace.
When was this written?
I don't know. I don't remember. Not so long ago. So now let me read you a piece from Adam Shafir. A rab of mine sent me...
Wait,
we're not done yet. Another piece from Avraham Shapira. Hold on a second. A rav of mine sent me a piece, and I'm going to use this in the next few weeks, called this, it's like a 32-page monograph by a person named Rav Shaul Bar-Ilan. Rav Shaul Bar-Ilan, you can ask Rav Shaul, Rav Shaul knows him personally from Yeshiva. And he wrote this little piece called what he called Kaftor HaPele. Kaftor HaPele means the button of amazement. And it's a monograph describing in great detail how it's forbidden for an individual soldier to participate in the disengagement. So, like every good safer nowadays, when you get it, you'll see, you know, if you're interested, I can email you. It's a PDF file. You get a lot of, you know, piano people. You'll give me your email, and I'll email you the file. But it's in very difficult Hebrew. And you think you have Haskamos. So he has from Rav Shapira. You have from Rav Rabinovich, the Rosh Chief of Maale Adumim. From Rav Zalm Nechemiah Goldberg. You have from, there's another one here. You have from Rav Nevensal. Rav Nevensal is one of the Rosh Yeshiva, the Yeshiva Rakotel. These are the leaders of the Tzionim community. So Rav Shapira writes the following. Samachti lekabel takuntis kastor hapele. I was very happy to get this notebook. Ha'osek bibirur ha'sudya ha'oserek pinu yehudim mechevel katip ushar mekamot. I was very happy to receive this booklet that talks about the forbiddenness, the impermissibility of removing Jews from Gush Katif. Ha'bevusas kulo b'divrei ha'alacha al pi ha'poskim yishonim v'achonim. It's totally based on Torah. V'yihi ratzon sh'tehezu ha'choveret Tokachat einayim ivrot latoim b'dvar halacha. And I hope that this book will open up the blind eyes of those who are mistaken in the laws of the halacha. Ubirachti l'chol yosrei asher kadosh baruch yishlach bracha v'hasara b'chol pa'am ma'aseh pa'aleichem. And they give you bracha that you should succeed. Hamshech yitzyashvut hayahadut b'arzeinu hakadoshah. You should continue to settle and continue to develop. U'zchutas et Eretz Yisrael tagen aleichem, and the Eretz Yisrael should protect you. And should become to good, etc., etc., etc. So, Rav Shapira, the one who said that, yes, democracy gives you the malchut, that same Rav Shapira then wrote a letter to this person who wrote this book and says, disengagement is absolutely and totally forbidden. It's very interesting to see the same Rav Shapira, he says, right, we hope that you will find a way to ensure that our people do not find themselves in a situation in which they are faced with actual contradictions of the law of the Torah. So here comes along the government of Israel, and in the eyes of Rav Shapira and many Rabbanim, has come up with a law that compels the citizenry of Israel to violate the Torah. What's a halacha? Yeah, aser. It's clear. So, yes, does Ari also want to have the din of Amalek? Sure. Except when he tells me to do something that's awesome. And this community, this Torah community, obviously feels very strongly, as we learned, that's what we were learning last week. The Ramban, they pass it like the Ramban, not like the Rambam, that Yusuf Eretz Yisrael is in this to be a Raisa, and it's forbidden forbidden from the Torah to abandon any land in Israel. And that's exactly what the government is compelling them to do. So what I wanted to show you that was, this is what the Kaftor HaPele is so interesting for. Because what this disengagement has done is, you believe in the government, right? You know, I believe in the American government. So it's interesting. I was in YU once, and A.M. Rosenthal came to speak in YU. And you know, A.M. Rosenthal was a New York Times. But before that, I think he was a congressman, was he? What was he? Something in Washington. So they asked him, there was a prayer group of all these, you know, Baptist whatever congressmen, and they said, we'd like you to come speak to us. So Aaron Roosevelt gets him and he says, I'm going to answer the question that you all want to ask me as a Jewish American. Is there dual loyalty? What would you do, you know, if you were forced to, you know, America was forced to go to war with Israel? Whose side would you be on? Would you be on America's side? Or would you be on Israel's side? So now here you have a whole community of, and Aaron Rosenthal said, I'm an American. Yeah, that's what he said. All right, and then what can you do? Now what would we say? What would we do if American society told us to violate the Torah? All right, we're Jews. I'm a Jew. Goodbye. Right. There's no dual loyalty. I support America to the extent that it allows me to serve God. Not more, not less.
That goes to Jonathan Pollock.
What?
That goes to Jonathan Pollock.
What could I tell you? I think there's more to BCI in that case. Okay. In any case, here you have people that believed in what Rav Kook wrote. Rav Kook wrote that the government and state of Israel has an essence of malchut, in a sense, an aspect of monarchy. And what they really believed, even more than that, is that it was Reshit Tzmichas Geulasenu, that it was the precursor for the Mashiach, for the Melech HaMashiach. And now here comes along that same government, and the government that they believed in is now instructing them to violate the very precept that they held the most dear. So is there dual loyalty?
No, because the whole you're still being true to yourself to the halakha.
Hold on 1 second. So now let's go back to our American analogy. The government of America tells me, Rabbi Spalter, you can't keep the Torah anymore. So what do I say?
Goodbye.
Why? Well, you're an American citizen, so what do I say?
I'm also one of the Jews.
And therefore, what do I say about, what is my attitude now going to be towards the government of America?
You're dictating my personal life, my religion.
What is my attitude going to be towards the government of America? The government.
The government
that I always supported, that I believe in, the democracy.
You don't have to support them anymore.
What? The government that I always believed was the government that I supported. So now, instead of saying, on the one hand, I could say, well, it's this president, it's this, it's that. Or I could say, I'm starting to question whether I believe in that form of government at all. Now let's read from what he writes. Let's see. Okay. This is from his introduction. He says, "Ein ikar chidusha shel chuveret zu b'miniyat ha'isurim ha'umdin b'fnei kol chayav v'shoter b'kochot ha'girush." He says, this little notebook, this little pamphlet, I'm going to tell you like 35 isurim, 35 different ways that it's forbidden to get involved in the engagement, disengagement. And he goes through the whole list. I'll share some of them with you in the coming weeks. That's not what much special about this. But rather, the chiddush here is four things. Reshit, first of all, Hachoveret Koreit, Kedi Shekatib B'Farash M'Mashkana, this booklet calls you, L'Hafrid Ben HaShayla Medinit. You have to separate between the national question, Ibu Tar Mitzad Halacha L'Medina Yisrael, L'Hashig Et Kochotea Mishtachim Mesuyamim. Right? It distinguishes between the question, can the state of Israel disengage? There's also a citizen question. He says, fine, that's one thing for the government to say, we're going to disengage militarily. But then does the government have the right then to say to private citizens, we're going to pull you out too? It's a very interesting question. The government of Israel could say, yeah, we want to disengage from Gaza. But what right does it have to then pull citizens out of their homes too? Leave us alone. We'll stay. Why does Gaza have to be Judenrein? I saw an article that Bill Scherzer gave me from Rabbi Mishkin. Great question. Could you imagine the state of Israel saying, yes, we're gonna annex Jerusalem and we're going to kick out every Arab? What would happen? What would happen? International outrage, United Nations resolutions. There would be not just boycotts, there would be sanctions. But all of a sudden, the state of Israel wants to say no Jews are allowed to remain in Gaza. Hey, what does everybody say?
Shkoyach.
What the heck? Right? It's one thing for the government to say, we as a government are pulling out. It's another thing, a halakha question, do they have the right to pull us out too? Next. Ad hayom lo hitmodidu ha'mei she'la zu, mibnei she'bizman chorban yamit, they never had this question because when they destroyed yamit, l'mashal, haya barur she'ish ene ratzul yishar atachat shoton vitri, nobody wanted to remain under Egyptian rule. So now we have the question, can I force the state to do something for me as a citizen? Here's the important part. A great percentage of the settlers say, right? Even if the government leaves, ha'yishuvim evriim, we'll have a little autonomous region. We're not leaving. The government wants to leave? We're going to stay and have the autonomous region of Gush Katif. So the question comes up. This is the bold and last the beginning at the end of the first paragraph. So they're asking the question, to what degree does the state of Israel have the ability or the right, the halachic right, to subject its will upon its citizens? So this comes up to the question. Is it a melech? Or is it just not? So here's what he says. Hachidush ha'ilchati sh'yesh b'choberetu b'tana. My big chiddush, he says, my big innovation is, shekola v'yunim sh'asinu b'avar. All of the issues, this is a very controversial thing he says. All of the diyonim, all the discussions we've done in the past, b'ma'amadasho m'mdina al pi halacha, about the status of the state according to halacha, l'chora einam taksim hayom. They no longer apply today. Rav Kook, Rav Herzog, all the rabbis, doesn't apply anymore. Why? Listen what he says. Kevan shekiyom midiniyut habagach. Anybody know what the bagach is? Anybody heard of the bagach? The bagach is the Israeli Supreme Court. Beit something. Beit Gadol Tzedek, I don't remember. He lahagbil et marut hamdina al ezrachim pam achar pam. He says, we now live in a police state where the Supreme Court of Israel imposes its will and the rule of the state more and more, af neged tovat hamdina, against the good, the best interest of the state. Medinut, shegama medina mikira b'tzidkata, but he said, then the state goes along and goes along and goes along with it. Ata me'ele ola ta'ana. This is how he says it. So now we have the ta'ana, the claim. Im kol samchut hamedina hirak samchut sham dinyot, Sehem begeder dina de malchuta dina. See those words? If the whole rule of the state is no longer malchut, it's not a melech anymore. It's just dina de malchuta dina. So then, it only has the same power as any other government would have. So just like if George Bush would tell me to violate a halacha, he would have no rights. So since I'm reevaluating my whole view of the entire Israeli government, it doesn't affect me. You can't impose its law on me.
It's like any other type of
correct.
Government.
Correct. That's a scary thing.
Yeah. But on the other hand,
I'm showing you this because it's a very right wing position. But you can understand a lot of the residents of Gaza feel this way. Mm-hmm. Well, if this is the government that's going to impose its will on me, I don't recognize what it is in this government according to halacha anymore. It's not, there's not a melech, that's not the melech that God wants.
But
then, it has no right to impose its will on me anymore. Yeah.
You say the government has the right to withdraw themselves.
Yes.
But do they have the right to leave those people to be defenseless?
Well, they're defenseless now. They had this last weekend.
Do they have the right to impose the government? It's a very interesting question. Does the right have a government the right to impose its will on a group of people against those people's better will because the government feels it's in those people's best interest? I don't know.
I'm just saying, if they were to pull out totally and leave them there without...
It's interesting. What I'm trying to say, well, you know, why couldn't these people say, go to the UN and say, you know, guarantee your safety. We'll all be under the Palestinian rule. We're not going to cause problems for you because you're in charge.
They already know what the UN will do.
I know.
They did it in 56. They did it in 67.
All I'm saying is it's so interesting that until now, and he says it again in a couple of other places I could show you in the booklet if you're interested. I'm going to stop now. But he says other places even stronger. He says this, what the state was has to be updated. Our perspective of the state and its power is no longer what it was. And I have to, like when I read this, I read this booklet, and you're going to see more in the coming weeks. It's sad to me. It's more sad than anything, because here you have people that really, they put their heart and their soul and their belief and their whole faith system was based on a certain perspective and understanding of the state of Israel. And this disengagement process isn't just moving them from their homes. It's jarring their hope, the foundation of their beliefs and their understanding of where they live. And that's a very painful thing. It's a very difficult thing. Yeah, it makes it only worse.